Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. We have the opportunity to discuss several aspects of it, especially several that are prominently in Washington's focus at this juncture, with one of the country's foremost national security reporters, a man who we touch base with from time to time to get his sense of what's going on, and this is a very important moment to do that. He is Rowan Scarborough, a national security reporter and veteran of the Washington Times. He is the author of Rumsfeld's War and Sabotage, America's Enemies Within the CIA. Rowan Scarborough, welcome back. It is so good to have you.
Good to talk to you, Frank.
Well, you've been reporting on various aspects of this story for some time, of course, Rowan, including a series of reports on aspects of it that haven't gotten much attention, and we'll come back to that in a moment. But I did want to ask you, first of all, for your reaction, your take on what was unveiled yesterday in the way of indictments of three individuals associated with the Trump campaign by Robert Mueller.
Frank, I thought one of the most significant events yesterday was that John Podesta's brother resigned as head of the Podesta Group, and that he is essentially confirming that Mueller has made him and his company a target of that probe. So this probe is more than just looking at Trump people. They're now also looking at the Democratic swamp that sucks in lots of money from lots of foreign clients and then goes around town lobbying for them. So I thought that was a really big deal, because it tells me that we know what the other shoe is that needs to drop, and that is how this dossier was funded. And we now know it was funded with Hillary Clinton money going overseas to pay Russians. And if Mueller is willing to look into the Podesta Group, I think that shows that he would be willing to look into how this dossier was funded with campaign money, which on its face to me seems to be very, very iffy, whether you can take campaign money and start paying foreign agents for their work or for their information.
To say nothing of foreign Russian agents that, who seem to be at least one of the sources of this so-called dodgy dossier. But let me come back to that, if I may, Warren, just very quickly before we turn to it. Were you surprised by anything that was contained in the indictments, the guilty plea, for that matter, of this fellow George Papadopoulos? Was that a revelation, and do you think that's the last we've heard of that?
Well, right. We knew Manafort was going to be indicted. George Papadopoulos, whose name surfaced a few times because Trump turned all their campaign emails over to Congress, and then some Democratic staffers leaked some of the contents to the Washington Post, in which Papadopoulos was urging meetings with Russians to facilitate Trump's goal to have better ties with Putin, which we can all question. It was surprising that Mueller put that guilty plea out along with Manafort. I think it was a signal from Mueller that, hey, there may not be anything about the Russian probe in the Manafort indictment, but we are looking at the Russian probe. And in the filings made clear that Mr. Papadopoulos has been cooperating with Mueller since at least July. And again, you know, his legal staff writes these things up. I mean, so they have why are they putting that in? And I think his prosecutors, many of them Clinton donors, Democratic donors, are sending a message to Trump people that this guy is talking to us.
Right. And there may be other, to use your metaphor, shoes to drop on that score as well. Let me come back, though, to the larger point you've made, and you've done some wonderful reporting on this, Rowan Scarborough, at the Washington Times, about other aspects besides this dossier of Hillary Clinton's collusion with Russia. I think there's just really no other way to describe it, whether it's the Uranium One deal, her husband's very high pay-to-play speech making there. This business of Skolkovo, which has, to my astonishment, not gotten any attention really to speak of at all, namely an effort by the Clinton State Department, the Obama administration more generally, but specifically Hillary Clinton State Department, to facilitate the establishment of a Silicon Valley in the outskirts of Moscow, a town called Skolkovo, which involved a lot of transfers of militarily relevant technology, as you know, Ron. Are those likely to get attention from this special prosecutor? And can they really, since his conduct in the course of an investigation by the FBI of some of that would seem to be a decided conflict of interest? How do you see that playing out?
Well, I think, first of all, if Mueller wanted to start looking into the uranium deal, he would have to go back to Deputy AG Rosenstein, because I'm sure that when those two people sat down to go over the scope of the investigation, Uranium One was not part of Russian interference in the 2016 election. So I think Mueller would have to, if he was so inclined. But what Uranium One shows us is that there was a pattern of Hillary State Department doing favors for Russia, and then people associated with Putin doing favors for her, i.e. money. I mean, over $100 million flowed into the Clinton Foundation from people connected to the uranium deal on the Russian side. And at the same time, she's trying to get Silicon Valley to help Putin build his own sort of cyber city outside of Moscow. I mean, that's a big, the phrase is quid pro quo. That on its face is quid pro quo. Now, whether the Justice Department wants to try to make a bribery investigation out of that, as they did in the Virginia governor case with McDonald, I don't know if that's going to happen or not. But Mueller, to me, Frank, would have to go seek permission to do that. And I don't think his guys would want to do that, frankly.
I don't think they want to do it. And I think they would be conflicted out if they tried. Let me turn to one other thing. You've been following very closely in your excellent reporting on what's going on in the Pentagon, Rowan Scarborough, about this issue of transgenders being allowed to serve. President Trump has indicated that he doesn't think they should. A federal judge yesterday, as you know, countermanded him and said at least those that are currently serving will be allowed to continue to do so. A rather brazen example of judicial overreach, it seems to me, particularly with respect to the commander-in-chief's authorities. What do you make of this, Rowan? Is there a problem here? Or is the judge on sound footing to just tell the president what to do with respect to the United States military?
Well, you know, the courts have traditionally given wide leeway for the military to regulate Congress and the military to regulate troops. It's in the Constitution that it's Congress's duty to regulate the military, and it's the president's duty to command them. But these days, we have a judge in Hawaii, a district court judge, trying to dictate immigration policy for the nation. So times have certainly changed. So like that case, I think this is a case where in the end, an appeals court is going to have to get involved, and then maybe the Supreme Court. I think the way Mattis would like to go, this is my opinion, is that we would just stay with the current troops who are transgender could remain in, but we would not take that next step, which was supposed to happen earlier this year, and that is to begin recruiting transgender people into the military. It seems to me that is the compromise that they're headed for within the administration. And then the courts, it's going to be challenged by activist groups. And that to me will be the final determination. But presidents and Congress should be given leeway to decide what is best for the readiness of the force. And that's what higher courts have traditionally done.
Right. And it seems in this case, the military has pretty clearly indicated that they have real problems with the impact on readiness and preparedness of the troops if this goes forward. Rowan Scarborough will be watching it closely, as I know will you. I'm hopeful that in the end, the courts will reassert the standard practice and give the president the discretion that he's needing in this case, among others. Keep up the good work, my friend, at the Washington Times. Thank you for visiting with us, and I hope you'll do so again very soon. Next up, we'll speak with Kevin Freeman. We'll talk with him about economic warfare developments of importance to you. That and more straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.